Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's June 24th. Currently 51 degrees here in Old Town Park City under partly cloudy skies. We've got 57 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good Tuesday morning, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Wasatch Back forecast for your Tuesday. We're looking at lots of sunshine heading our way in Park City. We'll call it partly sunny, though, with some clouds and some sun at times. A little bit of smoke and haze lofted in the air as well. Temperatures will be climbing into the mid-70s, so another pleasant afternoon in Park City as we stay in the low to mid-70s for highs. The Heber Valley, lots of sunshine with a few scattered clouds from time to time. A little bit of smoke and haze will be possible there as well, with temperatures climbing into the lower 80s for your Tuesday afternoon, still well below average for this time of the year. Things start to change more, though, as we go into the second half of your work week. Wednesday will feature mostly sunny skies. We'll see those temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 70s for highs in Park City. We'll see our high temperatures climbing into the low 80s once again for the Heber Valley. Now, as we move into the second half of the week, Thursday, sunshine and much warmer weather builds in. We're talking highs in Park City back to the low 80s across the area, but for the Heber Valley, high temperatures jump into the upper 80s to around 90 degrees. Now, as we go into your Friday, the warming trend continues. Lots of sunshine expected. High temperatures will be in the mid-80s for highs in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the low to mid-90s in the Heber Valley. And then as we go into your weekend, again, the hot weather will stick around as our next heat wave continues to build in. High temperatures in Park City on Saturday will be in the mid-80s. High temperatures in the Heber Valley will be into the mid-90s. We stay into the mid-80s, mid to upper 80s for highs in Park City on your Sunday with lots of sunshine. With high temperatures climbing into the mid-90s in the Heber Valley, we'll stay into the mid to upper 90s for highs in the Heber Valley by the time we get towards your Monday. Yeah, it's going to be quite hot with high temperatures even in Park City climbing to around 90 degrees. So enjoy another day of below average temperatures, because well above average temperatures are on the way, especially as we close out June and begin July. That's your latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. We'll take a look at the agenda for Wednesday's county council meeting. Later on, founder of Wild Heart Sanctuary, Sonia Ritzens, with details on their annual benefit concert this Thursday. Don Roll has details on the Friends of the Ski Mountain Mining History fundraiser. That's happening next week. Well, Summit County says residents did not get enough signatures to put last year's Dakota Pacific Development Agreement on the ballot this fall, but the residents could sue to challenge that. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports.
The county stopped counting signatures in March, but had until Monday to formally determine if there were enough. The Summit County Clerk's Office verified 3,214 signatures, which falls short of the roughly 4,500 needed. It officially declared the petition insufficient hours before the deadline. That means it won't appear on the county's ballot this November unless a court rules differently. The seven residents who sponsored a referendum on Dakota Pacific real estate's development, initially approved in December, say they've turned in more than 6,000 signatures. They said on their website in March, "We will pursue legal remedy to reinstate the rejected packets." The sponsors did not immediately respond to a request for comment and had not filed in Third District Court as of Monday. Clerk Eve First previously told KPCW 30 of the 77 signature packets her office received over the past month did not meet the petition requirements in Utah election code. The sponsors have said she's the one who didn't follow the code. A Summit County press release Monday says the signature verification process was done in consultation with the Utah Lieutenant Governor's Office and Summit County Attorney's Office. Meanwhile, the developer has submitted a new and separate application to build at Kimball Junction under a new state law written to greenlight its plans. Dakota Pacific applied for a new development agreement May 30th. It can't be challenged through a referendum because the new law gives the approval power to county staff, not to the county council. KPCW has published a copy of the proposed agreement online. If the new route to development still fails, the company still could incorporate its own town. But the Utah Lieutenant Governor's Office told the Salt Lake Tribune last month that process might take 3 to 6 years. Dakota Pacific's proposal is a 725-unit neighborhood and public-private partnership with the county to develop and redevelop the land around Skullcandy's headquarters. The redevelopment included new civic buildings, a larger transit center, more affordable housing, and a mixed-use plaza. Summit County and Dakota Pacific split the cost of the partnership, but the company's contribution is capped at $3.7 million. Residents opposed to the project have expressed concerns about adding people to an already busy area of the county and what that means for traffic. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. I'm Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Summit County Council meets Wednesday starting at about 3:50 at the Richens Building. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start off first with yesterday's news that the Summit County Clerk's Office officially declaring the petition to stop Dakota Pacific insufficient, meaning that it will not appear on the ballot this November unless some kind of court ruling happens. In March, the residents who sponsored the referendum said that they would pursue a legal remedy to reinstate those rejected packets, but with the legislature allowing Dakota Pacific to move forward with an administrative permit, is the referendum here moot, or do the residents still have some legal standing?
Well, they certainly can take legal action if that is something they choose to do. I do believe it is moot. I believe that this additional process that's following the SB 26-27 will continue regardless of any other outside court action, and eventually this will land on my desk, and once a decision is rendered there, that will essentially officially make it moot. But I believe it is moot as now.
Yeah, so as we know, Dakota Pacific applied for a new development agreement back on May 30th. And again, we understand that it can't be challenged through a referendum because that new law gives power to the county staff, not the county council. So, I mean, is there going to be any kind of challenge to the law itself that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. That is not likely to come from the county. And as you mentioned, it's made this process an administrative process as opposed to a legislative process. An administrative process is not subject to referendum. So I believe that, I just listened to the report that was just done by KPCW and Connor, and it sounded 100% accurate to me. I understand that's probably very frustrating to those that are against this process. And as we've always stated all along, we never appreciate when the control is taken out of our hands, that this is not something we would like to have done. Even though this development was approved 4-1 by our county council, it's still the way it has gone about is not ideal for us. However, it is the law of the land, and we're going to uphold it, and it's going to come to my desk, and if every dot, I is dotted and T is crossed, it'll be approved.
All right, let's see. Any updates on the cease and desist orders that have been filed by the West Hill sponsors?
No, I don't. I don't. I know that's on our legal team's desk, and they are addressing that. I'm going to give you my opinion, which I think is that order was not something that we're legally concerned about. That is just my opinion as I've looked at it and looked at the comments made. I think we have the ability and the right to have a comment about an incorporation in our county, and I think we would continue to do so. But we're obviously taking any kind of a legal filing or any kind of a claim very seriously.
Yeah, sounds like they were trying to implement some kind of gag order.
Right. I would agree that. And then, of course, especially the county council, they have a First Amendment right to have an opinion about almost anything. So we as staff maybe are trying to be a little bit more careful, but I've reviewed the comments, and I'm not concerned about that at all.
Okay. And then at what point can't you say something about something?
Well, I think we don't want to disparage human beings. We don't want to disparage people. We don't want to be liable or slanderous in any way. I don't think that's what happened here. I think we've always commented on a proposed incorporation in our community and how that would affect us. We have been asked, if you look at the at the paperwork involved in that incorporation, they're asking the county to provide services to that area. That's going to affect us, and we have an opinion about that, and that's going to affect taxpayers and those in the Camas Valley. And so I think having an opinion about that is not something we're concerned about.
Okay. Taking a look at the agenda, during work session, the council will get a presentation of the charity plan from Intermountain Park City Hospital. Reading through the report, it said that Intermountain Health has paid some $469 million in taxes last year. Some of those were property taxes, and I guess I thought that nonprofit organizations were exempt from paying property tax.
I actually don't know the answer to that question. I had written that down in my notes as well. And then there was, I think they have talked about some $746 million in community benefit. And the whole point of this agenda item is just an annual justification of tax-exempt status. So I had the same question you had. They do so much good work. I'm excited to hear from Amy and Lori. And they said over 3,500 cases of benefit to our community. So that's a good question for them.
Okay. Looking later on the agenda, North Summit Fire District will be reviewing some policy amendments. Anything of note here?
I don't think so. They have a software system that has gone through and looked at their existing operations and training policies, and I think they're just trying to conform with state and federal regulations. So I think it was a laundry list of changes. I think they're just kind of going in there and doing some cleanup.
All right. The council will also consider firework restrictions for areas within the unincorporated areas of Summit County that fall within the North Summit Fire District. I thought the restrictions were already approved countywide.
They weren't, and unfortunately, just the way we're set up with special service districts in those different areas, we did this for Park City Fire District, and now this is North Summit Fire asking us to do the same thing. Unfortunately, in South Summit, they're an independent fire district, so we an independent fire protection district, actually. So we don't have the same power to write a letter to the Utah Forester and ask them to ban fireworks. So this is something we want to do in North Summit. It's very important to us. If there's anything keeping me up at night, it's the threat of wildfire. I know I have friends and acquaintances who have lost homes in southern Utah in the Forsyth fire. That's a terrible tragedy, and that could hit us very easily. So I'm hoping people will be very careful this 4th of July and 24th of July.
Yeah, so South Summit, then, are you saying that fireworks are allowed, huh?
As far as I know, they are. And of course, again, they operate independently as us. We work very closely with Chief Thorell out there, and we'll be having conversations about this, but I'm not aware of any ban right now.
Okay, and this doesn't happen very often. A request for a tax abatement for state-assessed mining claims. This is being asked for from United Park City Mines. So tell me what's going on here. We're talking about property that used to be state-assessed, now locally assessed? Right.
I think it went from state-assessed to locally assessed. I think there was also a situation where there was a double assessment over the years. So this is only $2,200. I think that the request from the auditor is that the auditor believes that this has been paid over the years. It's only $2,000, and they're just asking the council to deadhead these taxes and the interest and cease the collections and put this one to bed.
Yeah, and why would something change from state-assessed property to locally assessed?
I'm not sure. I mean, state assessments usually are those that cross county boundaries. So if they've gone from one county to another, that's usually where the state is involved. We would always like to assess infrastructure in our county locally, just because we'll pay more attention to it than the state does. Also, the state often will have an organization that will request an abatement, or they will appeal their assessment, and often the state doesn't have the resources to really go through that appeal and assess it correctly, and they'll just grant it. That's been a concern of ours over the years. So we like those locally assessed. We will go through it and very, very carefully assess any appeal that takes place. So, but again, this is such a small amount of money, and I think between this and the double assessment over the years, there is a belief that PC Mines has been paid here.
Okay, let's see, later on a discussion and possible approval of a resolution in support of Utah public lands. This, I believe, in response to Senator Mike Lee's sell-off bill that would have thousands of acres offered for sale across Utah. So any idea how many acres we're talking about here in Summit County?
I don't. I think this is just such an important important issue for us here locally. This is came mostly from Councilmember McKenna, who has felt very strongly about this. I think it's a great idea. We're trying to consolidate this with other individuals and really talk to our legislators, our federal legislators, about this, including Senator Lee. But I'm not sure exactly what the impact is here. We've also heard from not only our open space community, but also our hunters are concerned about this. The hunting community is very concerned about taking public lands and making them private. So I think we've got a lot of interested parties on our side, and I think we'll try to adopt this resolution and see how we can make this more of a public issue here.
Well, as we know, high land prices are probably the biggest obstacle, I'm guessing, to affordable home ownership. So why wouldn't we support some of the sale of the property? Because I think that's what it's all about, right? We need to build more houses.
Well, I think we do. I haven't really, you probably are aware of an organization in the state called CITLA, School and Institutional Trust Lands Administration. They have still thousands and thousands of acres of property available for development. That's been designated as development. So I would appreciate if we would get through that before we start taking public lands, and those have been used for recreation and other open space. I know that land is valuable, but I don't think we have land that we haven't developed yet. I think we have lots of land we could still use for housing. And if we wanted to privatize some public lands, I hope we would be more targeted than we have been. This is opening up. I know there's places that people hunt and recreate that are on this list. And I think those that maybe are closer to cities that make more sense for development, that might be something we could talk about. But this feels, again, like a federal-wide... let me see how I can say this. It feels very Doge. It feels very, let's just go in here and privatize things without really taking a targeted look at what we're actually privatizing.
And again, just resolution. I mean, it really does nothing other than say the council doesn't agree.
Yes, but we have our legislators that listen to us and have visited us, and I think they'll care what we think about this. And just like their constituents, we want to voice our concerns and make those known as they vote on these important legislative issues.
Okay, later on, sounds like Mountain Regional Water District's $43 million bond will be formally approved by council.
Yes, and this was addressed last week, some of the details around it, the loan, and even some of the increases in water rates targeted over the next, I think they went out 20 years. So I think this will be a parameters resolution, just for those listening, is kind of sets a ceiling on the total loan. We often don't know the total amount of a project. We have an estimate. So this parameters resolution will set a ceiling, and anything above that will have to come back to council.
Okay, and the money's going to be used for what?
It's for that treatment plant, and they're also using a significant amount of it to pay back an existing loan. So,
all right, let's see. Finally, a discussion and possible approval of a public recreation trail easement and access through the High Ute Ranch. Why is the county involved in that?
I think there's an easement that we need to enter into with Park City School District in order to connect some trails here. I think this is pretty exciting. I think this has been something on the wish list for Basin Rec for some time. A lot of negotiations have taken place between Basin Rec and I believe even Utah Open Lands and the High Ute private property owners. This would connect the High Ute Trail with the Ecker Middle School and eventually get up into the Hunter's Trail. So I think this is exciting, because Summit County Council is Basin Rec's board, they'd need to make this official. So,
yeah, that Hunter's Trail, though, isn't that private? So we're connecting up to a private trail. It's like part of the Pine Brook Homeowner Trail.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think we have an easement to utilize it, and I think it can be open for recreation. So,
okay. Well, also wanted to ask you about the Snyderville Basin Cemetery Board. Sounds like they're going back to the drawing board?
I haven't heard that from them, and in fact I have a meeting with them today. Mm-hmm. I've heard that from Mountain Trails, and I know Basin Rec has requested them to go back to other locations, but I'd like to talk to them about that. They've been pretty adamant about that existing location. Of course, you've heard some of the concerns from different organizations. I in my conversations with them before, they've said they have looked at other locations. So if there's other locations they're not aware of, I think they're open to that. But I really want us to give them some good feedback. If we don't want them there, let's tell them where they ought to go, because this is a priority of the council, and we want to respect the work of that that special service district.
Yeah, and is there another place to go?
That's a great question. I don't know that there is. There's another location that we've talked about internally. We wondered if they've looked at, so that's one we're going to ask them about. But the ones I know they've looked at are, you know, Klein Dolly and out in Silver Creek by Mammoth Drive. Some of those have some challenges that don't make a good cemetery district. So, well, we'll have to see. And again, I'm hoping to have a conversation with them today about that.
Okay. And any updates with regard to the 4 acres offered to Recycle Utah?
No updates, except that in the council meeting we had last time, they had a meeting set for that Friday with some of our staff, with John Angel, our public works director, and others. And I believe that meeting took place, and I think it went very well. I think there's some rethinking there on the Recycle Utah part for that 4 acres. But at the same time, we are moving forward on more of a master planning effort around not only recycling but solid waste in Summit County. We're still very interested in zero food waste. We'd like to really ramp up the way that we do things, and if Recycle Utah can be part of that, that would be really exciting.
Okay. Anything else, Shane, you wanted to mention?
I don't think so.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Leslie, thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Wild Heart Sanctuary is hosting its annual benefit concert this weekend, and on the phone with details is the founder of the sanctuary, Sonia Richens. Good morning, Sonia.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. So maybe first start by telling us, what is Wild Heart Sanctuary?
Okay, so Wild Heart Sanctuary, we're a wild horse rescue, so a Mustang rescue and sanctuary, and we've been in Park City since 2012, so quite a while. And we've been a nonprofit since 2008. But what we do, we rescue wild horses that have been through the Bureau of Land Management roundups, and a lot of them are very high risk. They've been injured or they're really old, you know, the higher risk ones that might not get a home otherwise. So that's the horses that we take, and we rehab them and just love on them, and they're here forever, and they form their own herd, and just we almost have 20 acres here, around 20 acres, and they run around like a wild Mustang herd would run around. And we do a lot of community outreach also, where we offer like events, like our concert that's coming up on Thursday on the 26th, but also yoga, Qigong, like private little nature walks and visits, and people can commune with the horses and meet them and, you know, take a pause in their lives and just be in nature. So, and the horses are just magical. They're all so gentle and so loving, and we don't break them or anything. We just let them be horses. So that's my Reader Digest version of it anyway.
Yeah. So on 20 acres, what is it that you could, I mean, how many horses could you hold there?
So we have 10, a herd of 10. So, yeah, I do this solo with the help of so many volunteers. So I like to keep it, you know, around 10 if we can, you know. So there's 10. Yeah, and they emulate a wild horse herd. So it's really cool.
Okay, so that's probably pretty much just because they need space to run, yeah?
Yeah, and they need space, and they graze, and everything. We leave all the indigenous, you know, plants out there, and they are like little four-legged medicine women, we call them. They just like, yeah, they really, when the horses graze on land, it keeps the grass growing. It's really the biodiversity of the soil, but 10 acres makes it perfect. I mean, 20 acres for 10 horses, it works out pretty good, but we supplement them with hay and, you know, supplements and special care too on this, along with the grazing.
Sure. And so when you get a new one, what, you spay a new or yeah. neuter it? Is that right away?
No. Yeah, that's the word. No, we don't. So what happens is the Bureau of Land Management, when they round up the stallions from the wild horses off our public lands, They actually, the word's castrate them, and it's sad. I mean, so the stallions are all castrated when we get them by the government already. So, so we don't get any babies here, so it would be great if we could, but we don't. I wish we could.
Well, you could get above 10 quickly.
We could. We'd have all these babies running around. Yeah, so they are already, they can't have any foals or fillies or anything. So.
Sure. So how do you get the horses?
So they've been all through divine intervention, I call it. So all different ways. My first one, the first two I got in 2008, Noble Moon and her mom, Windwalker, who's the lead mare, I got them when I was filming. I produced a documentary like many moons ago in 2005 to 2008 called Mustango, and I was doing a follow-up, and I was filming a roundup coming in the Harriman holding pens when that used to be open. And these are my first two I got because Windwalker was running around the corner. They just got rounded up from the Sinbad herd outside of Price. And her baby, Noble Moon, was only 4 months old, running by her side. And Windwalker, flung her head and hurt her jaw. And the Bureau of Land Management was like, you should just sit her to the side and we'll have to check on her later, which I was worried about because her baby was alone. So I ended up just buying them. And that was my first two Mustangs. So that's one of the stories. And I lived in the Avenue. So my journey began right there with two Mustangs. And I found a place to keep them right after that in Harriman. So it worked out until, I got them to Park City. So
what happens to them if you or other people like you don't take them?
So they're put in government holding pens and they do adoptions. The Bureau of Land Management does do horse adoptions. And we hope that they get to really good owners that care for them and keep them forever because you just never know, And besides that, they end up just in our government holding pens, just there for a long time. And, our taxpayer dollars are paying for all of this. They'd be much better for the environment left where they're at because wild horses, what they do is there's a bunch of studies, environmental studies on this too, but wild horses will, make these beautiful horse trails all day, go into the water holes and everything, up to 20 miles a day they're walking around. So they make these horse trails out in the wildlands. And then while they're grazing, they just barely eat off the top of plants. So we call them the bumblebees of the desert. And it helps pollinate all the flowers. And then when they go to the bathroom, they reseed our lands and help the biodiversity of the soil and the microbiomes and keep everything growing out in the wildlands. And they also help wildlands, their horse trails help wildland fires. So when you see those big fires, they'll kind of stop by the horse trails. So the fire jumpers I know that, jump out of helicopters, they always look for the horse trails because the fire starts stopping there. And if we round up all our horses and they're no more on our land, we'll literally have dust bowls because they're the ones that help reseed it and everything. And if they put cattle and other livestock on the land, like cattle dig, they dig up the land. They dig, dig the grasses up and everything. Once cattle leave the land, it's like a bunch of just mud and no biodiversity. Nothing's being reseeded. So they really help with our environment. We need them for our wildlands to stay green and thriving. So
if they're so good for the wildlands, then why are they rounded up? Does the herd just become too large or?
No, actually their herds are at a really good herd management level now. They call them herd management HMAs. But what they do is a lot of privately owned cattle go on the land after the roundups, which is really sad because they claim like there's not enough land for the horses or enough grazing. But you'll see within a few days after a horse roundup, there will be cattle and sheep on their land just grazing. So, it's for that, for grazing of cattle and sheep. Yeah.
Well, you say, you like to let them just be horses on your property, but could you train them and sell them and then help your bottom line and take more?
No, I don't want to do that because that gives a chance of them. Say I sold them and that owner, like, for some reason couldn't keep the horse anymore, which might happen. And there's a high risk that they might end up in the slaughter pipeline again. And I want them to just stay and be, you know, I just want them to feel safe and be a herd. It's really stressful to keep rehoming a horse because they're herd animals. And once they establish their herd dynamics too, they're like a family. So no, that's my philosophy is why I keep them all till the very end. That's why I have so many seniors. We call them the AARP herd because I've been here forever. But we call them the always awesome retired pony herd. So we have a lot of seniors here too. So.
All right. Well, so where are you located?
So we're in Silver Creek area of Park City. So the Sinclair gas station exit. And we're just 2 miles off of there, and yeah, just in Silver Creek, so okay. Really close.
All right, well, so give us the details of the fundraiser, when, where?
Okay, so it's this Thursday on June 26th, and we're going to have Cactus Buds come and sing, and they're a blast, and they're Marsha Bloom, who's the lead singer, is from Silver Creek. And then we're also going to have Lil and William, they're going to open up. They're a new duo that's just going to play at 6:30, and then the band will play. And people just bring picnic baskets and just hang out, you know, whatever they want to drink. And you're hanging out on our land, and everyone brings blankets and, you know, low chairs or anything like that. And we also have the wild horses, and they come up by the fence line, and everyone can meet them. And it's just beautiful. And then we do a sponsorship. It's called a monthly sponsorship for the horses to help take care of each one. So what they'll do, I'll tell a short story about the horse. And then instead of an auction where only one person sponsors a horse, we do it where as many people that want to can sponsor a horse monthly, and we have them commit to at least a year, you know, with their monthly payments. And that way people can do $5 a month, $10, whatever they can afford, and be part of, you know, taking care of these horses and feel like they're part of the Wild Heart team, you know, taking care of the horses. So we'll do that also. So we have sponsorship opportunities for every horse. And then an amazing silent auction, like a really great silent auction. We have new Rosno skis. We have William Cranstover that just donated one of his paintings, and just it's really also a good silent auction. I could go on and on about that, but there's some good stuff in it. Yeah.
Okay. Ticket prices are how much?
They are $88, and that's 100% donation. So they can go on wildheartsanctuary.com, and right on our homepage, there it is. You can just click and buy your tickets. And yeah, and everything, the directions will be sent to you, everything. And then you just show up a little before 6:30, get your lawn chairs ready, and get ready to have some fun.
Okay.
For a good cause.
All right, so yeah. 88, and that's kind of an odd price. Why that number?
Yeah, well, because 8 in numerology, it means infinity. So 88, I just thought that would be good, like, you know, infinity, like to keep the abundance going. At the sanctuary, so that's why.
Okay, so what's your biggest expense then for this? Is just the feeding the horses?
So every year we our big goal is to pay for the hay, and it's around $24,000 a year. We go through 1,400 bales of hay or more, and that's our big goal, to make that and then some, because our seniors take a lot of special care, like the extra veterinarian care, special feeding, you know, stuff like that, muscle work and stuff like that. So our goal this year is $30,000 to take care of the seniors and our hay, at least those two things. So, yeah, and the hay's all non-GMO, really clean, and we get it from a local guy up in Colville. So,
okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just everyone hop on wildheartsanctuary.com and come and join the fun. And it's for a great cause, and everything that you buy and the tickets you buy and every donation, 100% goes to the horses because no one gets salaries here. We're all on, it's all on volunteer basis and just, you know, from the heart, everyone just loves giving back to these horses. So yeah, come join us. It would be fun.
Okay. Sonia, thanks for your time this morning.
You too. Take care, Leslie. All right.
Sonia Richens, again, the founder of the Wild Heart Sanctuary. They're going to have their annual fundraiser this Thursday. Well, the Park City Community Foundation has announced the three finalists for the 2025 Women's Giving Fund Grant. Finalists include the Wasatch Immigration Project, which was founded in 2023 and has never before received the grant, Peace House, which was awarded a grant in 2017 for its transitional housing support program for people who experienced domestic violence, is also a finalist this year. The Community Foundation requires organizations that have previously received an award to wait 3 years before applying for another grant. The third finalist is SOS Outreach, which has never earned a grant but was a finalist both in 2022 and 2023. A total of $150,000 will be awarded to the three organizations, $90,000 going to the top one, the other two, second, third place, receiving each $30,000. Members of the Giving Fund can vote for the grant through July 13th. The winner of the 2025 grant will be announced at the annual celebration July 15th. Park City Community Foundation's Women Giving Fund began in 2015 to award high-impact grants to organizations which support local women and children. Runners-up began receiving grant money in 2023. Well, the Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History will host Music for the Mines next week, featuring local piano legend Rich Wyman in the studio. With me, I have the co-chair of the Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History, Donald Roll, along with Colleen Logan, who serves as the volunteer social media and public relations manager. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Leslie.
Yeah, so Don, why don't you just start and just tell us a little bit about Friends Group, who you are, and what it is you do.
Okay, well, we've been around. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary, actually. We basically promote our mining history, our rich mining history, as well as our focus is trying to save all the mining structures that still exist up in the mountains. And make sure that they're still here 50 to 100 years from now. If we didn't step in, they were all falling apart due to age, weather, and the tough environment up there on the mountain.
Okay, so Colleen, Amy, tell us a little bit about the fundraiser, when and where and how much?
Sure, so the fundraiser is July 2nd. It's called Music for the Mines, and local piano legend Rich Wyman has dueling pianos. Special treat, this event will have three pianists. And what's great about it in terms of raising money is that people who attend by ticket can request a song to be played, and they can enjoy it for a minute, and then if someone doesn't like that song, the next bidder swipes away the pianos and plays their song. So it's a great, fun, interactive way for people to get involved. There's delicious wines from Russian River Vineyards, there's heavy appetizers, and it's at the beautiful Pendry Hotel on Wednesday, July 2nd. So a terrific way to kick off the holiday weekend.
Sure. And tell me, it starts when?
Doors open at 5. The event starts at 6. You can actually go to the KPCW website. It's on the community calendar, and there's a link to buy tickets through there. Or if you're on the Park City Museum website, parkcityhistory.org, under the events page. And it's a great event for locals, for people who have guests coming into town, not quite sure what to do that first day before the weekend starts.
Okay, tickets are how much?
Tickets are $175.
$300.
So, excuse me, $300, sorry.
Okay.
$300 per person.
That's right.
Okay, great.
And we have about 25 left. We have over 100. We're hoping to have full capacity of 130 this year.
Okay, and again, that kind of the dueling, the bidding on the piano, you hope to raise more in addition to the ticket prices, yeah.
Absolutely, and last year, this is our second year, Rich has volunteered his services. He actually came to us and said, I'd like to help out, can I do a concert? And he proposed his Killer Keys dueling piano format, which was great fun. And last year, it was our, outside of Live PC, Give PC, it was our biggest fundraiser last year. And we made almost as much, in fact, more in song bids than we did in general admission tickets. It was pretty amazing how into it all of the attendees did for the for the evening.
Yeah, so
and it was great fun.
What songs get booed off?
The only song that Rich will not play, unless it's a very big donation, is Piano Man by Billy Joel. So,
big donation.
But literally, they play everything. I have no idea how they do it. I really don't. But you can, any song you request, they will play it.
Okay, so you're hoping to raise bunch of money. How much?
Well, last year we raised $42,000, which went towards went directly towards our project up at the Silver King Mine to restore that structure. This year we're raising money for the Thames Mine complex, which we hope to start working on next summer.
So, is the Silver King work done?
No, the Silver King. We're in our fifth year. And the goal is to complete by September, by the end of the summer work season, which will be amazing because this has been by far the largest project we have undertaken since the group started.
Right. It collapsed due to the heavy snow. Did it also damage the head frame there?
No, the head frame is fine. Last year we replaced the roof. We have a 10 times stronger roof now. This year it's doing structural work on the exterior, cleaning up the interior to make it safe as we want to do guided tours of the interior of the Silver King. There's still a lot of the original mining equipment inside that people don't see because it was very dangerous in there, and we're going to restore all the windows and uncover them and do the tin, etc. So the goal will be to make it look like much like it did 100 years ago.
Yeah, and so we're talking about the Silver King Mine located there at the base of Bonanza Chairlift.
Correct.
Is there going to be some way though that you're going to just get people to like maybe ski through it or?
No, you're not going to be able to. You can ski by it. What we're doing, we've been spending a lot of donors' money and effort to preserve these mining structures. And, we were up there all the time and we see people come and they want to know about, particularly the hikers and the lift assisted hikers in the summer. They want to know more about what the structure does, et cetera. So we are commissioning a travel stories audio guide that will be geocentric. So it'll pick up where you are and we'll give you 3-minute snippets, audio snippets with some historical pictures. Of the Silver King complex, and that's part of an initiative called the Historic Mine Route that's going to start from the Park City Museum and then end at the Park City Museum, going up Treasure Hill, over into Empire Canyon, and then come back down. And you'll see over 20 plus mining sites and many, many, many of the structures that we have we've worked on over the years.
Oh, sounds great. Then on the other side of the ridge there, you mentioned the Thames Mine Complex. Tell me a little bit about what's there.
Well, the Thames, the Thames conveyor we worked on in 2019 and 2020, because that was in danger of collapsing. Thank God we got to it before the big snow year, or it'd be gone today. As you mentioned, we had the roof collapse 2 years ago, which thankfully, the equipment up there is pretty industrial strength, even the roof collapse. Could not damage the hoist house or the hoist equipment. And last summer, thanks to funds from Park City Mountain as well as Park City Municipal, we were able to take the damaged roof off of the hoist house and the and basically get rid of all of the dangerous materials that had collapsed into the building. And so now we're in a position where we can reconstruct the hoist house, put a new roof on, etc. We're going to protect the Thames Mine is famous for. That was the terminal for the skier subway, which was the only one in the world where you could take go through a mine tunnel on a modified subway car and then go up the shaft to ski up in Thames. And that went from 65 to 69. And we want to preserve that history. So we're going to preserve the exit, garage door entrance exit. We also need to do some work to protect the shaft because right now it's open to the elements. And we want to do some work on some of the ancillary buildings up there.
Yeah, so when you talk about a hoist house, is that different than a headframe? I mean,
Yeah, the headframe is where the shaft is. So the shaft went down 1,800 feet. So the headframe is intact and in pretty good shape. And then the hoist, actually, think of it as the elevator operator for basically controls the cages, where they stop, et cetera. And actually, during the mining times, that was the most important job, the highest paying job in the mine, because if one mistake and anybody on those cages could be killed.
Okay.
So.
All right. And what else do you have left to repair?
Well, you know, there's the big project after that is going to be the Silver King Mill, which is just down from the Bonanza Chair as you go east, get down in the valley over there. It's Woodside Gulch, it's called. And, you know, that is a seven-story structure. And it's always amazing to me, people who ski at Park City Mountain literally never see it, because they're always looking right instead of looking left when you're coming down from Payday or the town lift. And it's the biggest remaining structure that needs some little bit of TLC. We really haven't even started engineering drawings or anything on that. That will hopefully be a project we start in 2027.
All right. Yeah, people can see it if they're riding their bike from Lake.
Absolutely. You come up Kings Road and you see it on the right-hand side as you're biking up Kings Road.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else you want to mention? Is this happening inside the Pendry?
Yes, it's inside the Pendry. We still have tickets available. It truly is a fun fundraiser. Rich is a great showman. Everybody had a blast last year, and we're very thankful to Rich and to the Pendry and to Park City Institute, who are donating two tickets to their Music on the Slopes. I probably got the Concerts on the Slopes this summer. So in essence, you're getting like $120 back from your $300 ticket.
Okay. Anything else?
I just want to say that if people are up on the mountain, they'll see the dollars at work for Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History, because they're putting the old roof very carefully on the new roof right now. So you can check it out while you're hiking or biking.
Okay. Colleen, Don, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Well, PC TOTS, that's Park City's early childhood education program, is celebrating a decade of service to Summit County families next month. Since opening its doors in 2015, the organization that provides scholarships to 80% of its students has grown from one inaugural location to three learning centers that provide care to 120 young children ages 8 weeks to 5 years old. Founded by a group of Park City parents who were committed to affordable, high-quality children's care, PC TOTS was the first grant recipient of the Women's Giving Fund, which enabled them to open their first center in Prospector back in 2015. Executive Director Sue Banerjee says the July celebration will be a fundraiser to help support their tuition scholarship program.
Most families can't afford high-quality care, and so PC TOTS is trying to bridge that gap. So the funds that we raise will go to helping to bridge the cost of care between what a family pays and what it costs PC TOTS to provide that high-quality care.
The 10-year celebration and fundraiser will be held Saturday, July 12th. PC TOTS board member Ann Sinnott says that tickets are $75, and you can find the link online at kpcw.org.
The event is called Quirks and Quizzes, and it is July 12th from 6:30 to 10. It's going to be held at the Legacy Lodge, and it's being sponsored by Vail, Epic Promise, Columbus Pacific, Park City Board of Realtors, and Powder Days, a local band. It's going to be a really fun event, dinner, drinks, trivia, live music, and it's just going to be a really fun time. So gather your teams and get ready for some trivia.
Banerjee hopes to raise about $100,000, which will be used for general operations and scholarship dollars. She says they're also in negotiation with the developer selected by Park City Municipal to redevelop the 5-acre Bonanza Park parcel, and that may include a child care center.
Bryn Shore Development Company reached out to us several months ago. They did a project down in Salt Lake, and they partnered with Neighborhood House, a nonprofit down there that provides childcare as well as care and support for seniors. And their mission very much aligns with what PC TOTS is doing there, and they're very interested in serving the community. We partnered with them in their RFP. PC TOTS is working with them. I think it'll be a process, but we're super excited. Right now, it's looking like there's going to be a childcare facility there. Fingers crossed.
With the majority of Park City's population now in the Snyderville Basin, Banerjee says they do hope to expand outside the Park City limits by adding more classrooms in Summit County. She says registration is already underway for next school year.